Hello and welcome to another episode of the NBCSports.com College Basketball Talk Podcast. It is Monday, March 18th. My name is Rob Doster. I have a fun show on the way for you today. I was able to connect with the guys from Hoop Vision. Once again, Jordan Sperber and Rafi Goldman. They put out the NCAA Tournament Bible on Sunday evening. It is an ebook that you can go out and buy with breakdowns, video, and written of every single team in the tournament. If you are a basketball nerd, this is going to be the best thing that you purchase this year. And I wanted to bring them on so that they could talk to us a little bit about some contrarian takes that they may have when it comes to the bracket. Both of these guys are scouting coordinator, former scouting coordinators and video analysts for Division I high major basketball programs. So they have some good insight and some takes that I would not have had myself. Before I get into that, I got to make the usual ask. Please rate, please review, please subscribe to this podcast in any app that you listen to podcasts in. An interaction that you have with this episode, it really does help. It helps us in the metrics. It helps us in the rankings. And this is the most important time for us to be ranked high in all of those apps. Right now, this podcast is ranked in the top three of all college basketball podcasts. And the first bracket breakdown episode that we released is ranked in the top two of all the episodes of college sports on iTunes. Everything you guys have done really has helped. And let me just ask one more time, if you do enjoy what you are hearing today, please just give me 5 stars, say something nice about me. It really, really, really does help. And it really, really, really does mean a lot to me. So for everybody that has done that already, I do thank you. For the people that are going to do it now, I thank you guys as well. And now let's get into that conversation with Jordan Sperber and Rafi Goldman. And now I am thrilled to welcome back onto the podcast Jordan Sperber and Rafi Goldman. They are the brains behind the Hoop Vision Tournament Bible, which is something that you guys need to go out and get if you want to win your NCAA tournament bracket pool. And you know what? I'm just going to open the floor to you guys. You know, Jordan, you've been on here before. So why don't you talk me through kind of how this idea came about and the work that you guys put in to make this thing happen. And first and foremost, just explain to everybody what exactly it is.
Yeah, well, thank you for having me again, Rob, and also having Rafi along. I'm excited to do this with him. But really, the idea started in the summer with Rafi and I on some phone calls. The idea was to basically put out content, college basketball content all year, try to build an audience, and then have this ebook. And it changed a lot from the summer to now, but the core was to help fans and even coaches. A pretty core audience is coaches watch the tournament smarter. And so there's analytics and data behind what's happened in past tournaments, and then also a scouting report, both a write-up and a video scout, which Rafi and I split up on all 68 teams.
And where can people find it? How much is it? Talk to me about what this product is that you're actually pushing.
Yeah, so it's weird that we don't really have a website. So the way to find it is it's pinned to my Twitter account, which is HoopVision68, and it's hosted by Shopify, but you'll find it right on the pinned Twitter account. And it is $14.99. It's 155 pages and 7 hours of annotated video. So Hoop Vision 68 is the Twitter account.
And it's definitely worth it for people that are listening, because I didn't even get the free content for letting you guys come on this podcast. I went out and bought my own, and I did that. Honestly, I did that because I know the work that you guys put in. I don't mind supporting it. I like people that are out there trying to grind and make it happen. Rafi, let me ask you this. First and foremost, how nervous are you being on your first podcast of the season? And secondly, take me through the process for you of putting together these scouting reports. Like, how much film of these teams did you watch? How did you go about trying to figure out what they do? Is some of this stuff just what you know from the time that you spend as a coach, or is this all stuff that you just kind of figured out once you first started watching these teams? Take me through all that process.
Yeah, you know, first of all, pretty nervous coming on, and I guess it is my first podcast, because we're not counting Jordan's podcast, but for me and Jordan, we split up. You know, we projected this probably late December, early January. You know, we split up the 45 high major teams for the most part, and the Gonzagas of the world that we thought were going to be tournament locks, and kind of spent the last 3 months watching those teams. You know, for me, I took me and Jordan took different approaches, but the approach that I took was each high major team that I had, I was clipping up 4 or 5 games on Sports Code just like I would if I was a video coordinator or GA for one of those teams, and putting together the video edits and write-ups from there. For the low major and mid-major teams, we started to kind of cherry-pick which teams have a possibility to win the league, doing some background research beforehand. And then, you know, for me, I did a lot of the low major ones early on in that first week. So a lot of it was watching the championship game and then working backwards from there, pulling film from Synergy, cutting up on Sports Code. And I would say the three biggest resources for numbers for me, you know, were KenPom, HoopMath, and then diving through some stuff on Synergy. You know, if a team is in the first percentile in post-up defense, there was probably something there. But, you know, for the low major teams, I wish I had more time. There's a lot of teams that I watched and cut up and broke down that I wish I had more time to clip up and watch, but was not afforded that opportunity like we had with those high major teams. And Jordan can probably tell you about his approach. I think he took it a little bit differently, but I'll let him tell you about that.
Go ahead, Jordan.
Yeah, so a little bit different in that I had been publishing stuff all year about these teams, whereas Rafi was kind of behind the scenes, and really his process was catered towards the ebook. I had been I had Duke and Virginia and Gonzaga, and I had done videos and analysis on those teams throughout the year. So just a little bit different, but where we were the same was for these low major teams this weekend. There was not a lot of sleep for the two of us to try to get these teams that we didn't know as well and become familiar with them, which is very similar to what our jobs were as video coordinators.
Yeah, I was going to ask you, how similar is this, you know, the content you're putting out in this tournament Bible, how similar is it to, let's say, what you would have turned out, Rafi, when you were at Tulane, or Jordan, when you were at Nevada? How similar is it to the stuff that you would have given to the players or given to the coaches or any of that?
I think that it's the same level of detail. The difference is that when you're working for a team, you can't miss anything. So we pick 3 or 4 main things for each team and went into really as good of detail as possible, the exact detail that we would have tried to have done in our video coordinator roles. But when there's so much at stake in winning a game, it's, you know, every little thing needs to be uncovered about the team. And when you're doing that for 68 teams, it's not quite possible. But even in our videos, how we have instance notes almost written in the exact way where you would write them to communicate with players. And so there's a lot of similarities to like Division I scouting in the ebook.
Rafi, let me ask you this, and then we can move on to some of the takes that you guys have, because that's the whole point of this, is to get your contrarian takes that these scouting coordinators and video guys have come up with. In all the video that you watched and the video that you broke down, was there anything that you didn't expect to find, or was there a guy running something that you hadn't seen before? Like, was there anything new that you found while you were doing all this?
Yeah, I mean, I think throughout the year, especially, January, February, and early March, I spent most of my time on conferences like the Big Ten, the Big 12, the SEC, and the AAC. So being able to dive into some of those mid-major conferences, you know, a team like a Northeastern, a Northern Kentucky, teams like that actually, you know, generally enjoyed watching and started piecing together, some video playbooks. You know, a team that didn't make it, I actually really enjoyed watching UNC Greensboro as well. So in hindsight, I wish I'd spent more time watching those teams, and maybe we'll dive into them a little bit more, this summer. I'd say Vermont as well. And also, you know, full discretion in terms of why we're able to meet the deadline that we met. You know, we did kind of hedge our bets in some places, you know, with America East, you know, the America East Championship, you know, Vermont was, I think, a 7.5, 8-point favorite. So I got that done, you know, a couple of days in advance, and would have been an even later night the last couple of nights if the teams we didn't bet on winning and had done a little bit in advance. didn't turn out to win their conference championships.
Who were the teams that you bet on that ended up losing? Was there anyone?
To be honest, no. I only did that for, I think, three conferences and got lucky with all three there. I guess not lucky because I was picking the favorite, but fortunate enough that all three favorites did prevail.
So what you're saying is that you're the expert when it comes to the picks.
when it comes to picking, you know, teams that are -9, you know, going into the game and essentially taking them money line, yeah, I think I'm quite an expert.
All right, so let's get into some of the contrarian takes that you guys have. That's why I want to bring you on here. I want to let you kind of showcase what you were able to dig up and what you were able to find. And I don't know what any of these are. I kind of want to be surprised by them when you reel them off. So I don't know if you guys each have like two or three or if you came up with all of them together. How do you want to do this?
Well, I'll start with one.
All right, go ahead.
So, again, my forte this year has been sort of the top 10 and 15 teams. And I'll stick with this one. The betting markets do not agree with me here. But KenPom does, or I guess efficiency ratings do. And I'm going to stick to Virginia is the best team in the country, even with a healthy Zion Williamson. I think it's really close. Obviously, Duke beat Virginia twice. Not that concerned about that. In the second game, they made a lot in one of those games, they made a lot of shots. Yeah, the second game, they made a lot of threes that Virginia probably would live with them taking. And it's added on to the fact that Virginia just lost to a really talented Florida State team. So if we're looking at like ESPN's tournament challenge, they have odds of what people are picking, and Duke is the heavy favorite. But at the very least, I think it's 1A and 1B. And yeah, I'm not afraid of the UMBC thing from last year. I'm not afraid of them losing the two to Duke. They have really, really good players and they have a really good coach. So I'm sticking with Virginia.
Yeah, I think that my take on that is more or less the same. I think what the betting markets have is, I want to say like, I think Duke is a +225 national title odds, and Virginia's getting, I want to say, +700. But I don't think it's that much of a difference. I do think Duke is probably a better team. But I mean, and maybe Rafi, you could speak to this, or Jordan. I don't know if Rafi, how much you've watched Virginia, but I think it's mostly that they now have like the bodies that they can match up with just about anybody. You know, last year, obviously, they didn't have DeAndre Hunter in the tournament. But now when you throw out their Hunter and you got Braxton Key and you got Mamadou Diakite, all of a sudden you can play this lineup that can almost switch about everything. And that's not what they had last year. You know, Jack Salt is not going to be guarding anybody on the perimeter. And when he was out there with another kind of slow-footed big guy, I think it changed things for him.
Yeah, they're versatile. They're not crazy deep, but I think that they have pieces that don't overlap each other. Even you mentioned Jack Salt. I mean, Jay Huff is pretty much the opposite of Jack Salt. Jack Salt is really good in the pack line at hedging ball screens, at screening and boxing out. And then Jay Huff is a really good offensive center who can shoot the three. He's a good role man. So it depending on the game, depending on the matchup, there's flexibility in that. With Diakite, like you said, I think he's gotten a lot better this year. He's a really good rim protector for them, and so they can mix and match a little bit more for those other two spots. Obviously, DeAndre Hunter and Kyle Guy and Ty Jerome are the three guys, but for those last two spots, they have some flexibility.
Do you get tilted as badly as I do watching Tony Bennett play Kihei Clark for 30 minutes a night?
I like Ty Jerome off the ball, so that would be my boost for Kihei Clark. But I agree. I think that their best lineups are probably with him on the bench. If he can hit a shot, it changes it a little bit, which has been a little bit inconsistent this year. But like they'll stick him in the corner sometimes, and if he can just hit that corner shot, I know last time I was on, we talked about Trey Jones in the corner and how that's such a big deal for Duke. He doesn't have to do a whole lot else to hit that corner shot and give Jerome a little bit of a break from bringing it up. But it's been a rough. I feel like the he had a 5 or 6 game stretch that was pretty rough.
Yeah, I always laugh when he's the guy shooting that corner three, because it really looks like they let one of the kids that comes out and plays like the halftime basketball game get on the floor, because he's so much shorter than. I think he's listed at 5'7", and I don't believe that for a second. All right, let's move on. Rafi, give me one of your contrarian takes.
Yeah, I mean, I just to elaborate on that, I hadn't seen a lot of Virginia, so I don't want to speak too much to Virginia. And by no means am I endorsing that Gardner-Webb will keep it close, but Gardner-Webb does run, you know, a 5-out offense where their 5-man's, you know, 6'6", shooting over 40% from three on low to medium volume. And with him in there, they do have 5 shooters and actually force a team that doesn't play zone in Radford to go zone because their 5-man just couldn't guard him, DJ Laster. And he went off for 32 points. So I think guarding on the perimeter may be something that Virginia has to do at the 5 position. Like I said, I haven't seen a lot of them, but this could be an interesting style of play for them to go against.
So are you – I knew I told you for a contrarian take, but did you just come on here and say that you think a second 16 seed is going to beat Virginia this year?
I did not. I'm not saying that. I'm just saying if you're talking about Jack Saul on the perimeter, you may see an opportunity for him to do that in the first round.
So you're saying that you think Gardner-Webb covers?
I'm not on here to make picks, but read into that as you will.
Right, I think the takeaway is that we know 16 seeds better than anyone else right now. That's the takeaway.
You do. That is a great selling point, man. That is a great selling point. All right, give me another take, Rafi. Give me something.
Yeah, so I would say, you know, a couple of matchups first round that I'm really excited about. Say Nevada and Florida. Florida runs their 1-2-2 three-quarter court where they will get and drop back to man-to-man defense, and they will get cross-matched and switch back in the half court. And Nevada has 2 really, really good isolation scorers, and Jordan Caroline, obviously, if healthy, and Kayla Martin. So I don't know, you know, imagining Kayvon Allen or Noah Locke or Andrew Nembhard trying to guard, you know, Jordan Caroline in isolation is a pretty scary thought.
So you like that? You like the Nevada matchup?
I think it's going to be interesting to see how Florida adjusts that and getting cross-matched versus Nevada's size or position and ability to score in isolation situations.
All right, what else you got for me?
I'd say the same bracket. Interesting to see how Northern Kentucky attacks Texas Tech's ice ball screen coverage, where they do keep everything to the sideline, because Northern Kentucky has a stretch five, not very mobile at all. But you know, Drew McDonald's about 6'8", 250, and I think plus 40% 3-point shooter. So within that ice ball screen coverage, him popping and on that short roll. Could be an interesting matchup as well.
Yeah, he is. I think he might be my favorite mid-major player that nobody knows about right now, because he's the guy that hit that game-winning shot in the
semis against Oakland, I believe, to go to Wright State.
He is like Kevin Pitsnoggle without the tattoos. I think that's the comparison I like to use.
Yeah, and they got another kid, Jalen Tate, 6'6" point guard, who's putting up, I think, 14 a game, like 4 assists, 4 boards, who's pretty good himself.
All right, what else you got for me, Jordan?
Well, I think just to play off Rafi a little bit, just in general, if you have a 5-man, and I don't know Northern Kentucky that well, but if you have a 5-man that can pick and pop like that, that is like the example I'm thinking of is when Duke played Louisville and were dominated for 30 minutes before that comeback, and Stephen Enoch was picking and popping for a 3 every time. A lot of these high major teams, Kansas would be an example, like Rafi said, Texas Tech in the ball screen coverage, they'll let 5 men shoot 3s, and you know the I guess cliche, but there's validity to it in that 3s increase the variance in a game and in an upset. So that, I guess, if I was sort of blindly picking based off of a skill set for an upset, I would want a 5-man that can pop. But anyways,
give me some examples of teams that you think fit that mold. Obviously, we got Northern Kentucky as one of them. I think Gardner-Webb upsetting number 1 seed Virginia. Rafi, you already touted that one. So give me a couple more.
Well, here's the thing. Like, I'm trying to remember who exactly I thought of as this would be a problem for that they don't have interest in guarding pick and pops. There were a couple teams. Kansas is definitely one of them. And the thing that I wrote about is there just aren't that many five men in college basketball that can really hit the three like that. And I'll give you an example, not from an underdog team, but Michigan and John Teske, who's a three-point shooter. Like, they want him to shoot threes when he's open. But he... it's a little bit different to be able to shoot them on the move. Let's say you run up to sprint into a ball screen, and then you slip it to pop straight for a three, and now you've got to shoot it with your feet not quite set. That's like an NBA shot right there for bigs, and that's why Kansas and even UNC, who will hedge ball screens, and just they get away with it really. But yeah, that's. Something to look for.
That's actually interesting because a team that made a run last year to the Elite Eight out of being a 9 seed, and a team that feels kind of like a trendy upset pick. I don't know if they count as an upset pick as a 4 seed is Florida State, and part of the reason I think people are doing that is because Fiondo Cabangeli can make those shots that you're talking about.
He is really, really good. I was not that familiar. I did them for the ebook, and I was not that familiar with them before diving in. And yeah, he's impressive. They have a ton of talent. Obviously, they looked really good in the ACC tournament. They did not get the easiest draw, I wouldn't say, in their region. But I do like Florida State.
I actually do think they have a fairly... I don't want to say it's easy, but the matchups actually work in my mind, I think. Because I like them against Vermont. I just think that they can out-athlete Vermont. And when it comes to Marquette, I think the way that you beat Marquette is to pressure Marcus Howard because they don't really have another ball handler, and Florida State can do those things.
I guess I was more looking towards Gonzaga and then the Michigan-Texas Tech. I was thinking more along like the Final Four.
Gotcha. Line. Yeah. No, that makes sense. They do have some good teams in that region. I actually have them beating Gonzaga, and it's because I don't know how well Josh Perkins is going to be able to handle all that pressure, but I don't think we need to have another Josh Perkins conversation on this podcast. Rafi, give me some more insight, man. Give me another take.
Another game I'm looking forward to is Liberty, Mississippi State. You know, two very contrasting styles, and I wonder who will be able to dictate tempo more. You know, Miss State's a team that likes to get out in transition, especially off of turnovers. Four of their guards, you know, three if Nick Weatherspoon is still suspended, like to get out in transition. Liberty only sends one guy to the glass, and they prioritize getting four guys back. So they're going to try and neutralize Mississippi State's transition offense. But, you know, live ball turnovers might dictate whether or not, you know, Liberty's able to pull off that upset.
That's interesting because Liberty is like the 112 seed I haven't really considered to be someone that can win that game. You think that they could beat Mississippi State?
If they take care of the ball, they might have a chance. Live ball turnovers, obviously, against Mississippi State are pretty deadly. But in terms of, you know, off a shot, they're getting back. You know, they'll send one guy, Scotty James, to the glass. The other four guys are getting back. I think in that regard, they'll get back. But if they turn it over, Mississippi State out in the open court is pretty tough.
Just how good do you think this Liberty team is? Because it's weird to me that with some of the strength that there is on like the 13 seed line and even the 14 seed line with Yale, I was surprised that it was Liberty that made the way all the way up to the 12 seed line.
Yeah, I mean, I saw their championship game against Lipscomb, and then went back and watched a little bit. So, you know, I do really like Scotty James. He's a physical post player. You know, they play through him in the high post, post heels over the top. And a lot of times they will, you know, throw it to him. You know, defensively, they'll let him guard one-on-one in the post. You know, he's not, you know, all that beat, 6'8", 230. So, you know, hit him against Reggie Perry one-on-one in the post, you know, could be a problem. And even though they are – only sending one guy to the glass in Scotty James, Mississippi State is a very good offensive rebounding team where they could have some opportunities, but they're not the best defensive rebounding team. They're not the most disciplined in their box. So Scotty James could get some offensive rebounds there. And they do have three shooters and another scorer in Caleb Holmesley as well.
All right, let me get one more from each of you guys before we get out of here. Let me start with you, Jordan.
All right, so Another thing that we talked about in the ebook, it's towards the beginning, is the concept of a value pick. So you shouldn't just be worried about if a team is going to win, but also what the public or what your bracket pool is doing for or is picking for that team. So the example here is if we go to Virginia Gardner-Webb, if you pick Virginia, you're not really going to move up in your bracket pool when they beat Gardner-Webb. Now, obviously, you still have to pick them because they are major favorites. But you're always looking for that balance between the best pick and what everyone else is doing. And usually there are a couple teams that are basically bad picks because so many people are taking them. They don't justify the risk, I guess. And so this year, that Final Four team is North Carolina. So 58% of people are taking North Carolina. And with given that information, I guess the hot take would be do not take North Carolina in your Final Four if you're trying to maximize your chances to win a bracket pool.
Yeah, and for people that listen to this and that play daily fantasy sports, it's the same concept as a leverage play. And basically what that means is if you think that North Carolina doesn't have as good of a chance to get to the Final Four as what is I think you tweeted it out today. It's 538 has them as 35% chance to get to the Final Four, and 58% of them are in their bracket. So if you take, I guess, like Kentucky or Iowa State or someone like that, and Kentucky has what, like 10% of the people picking them to get in, all of a sudden you are head and shoulders above the 58% of the people that had North Carolina getting into the Final Four, when the odds of North Carolina getting there over over Kentucky is not, what was it, 35% to 25% or something like that?
For North Carolina?
Yeah, versus Kentucky.
Oh, yeah. North Carolina is 35, Kentucky is 24.
Yeah, so it's that's for daily fantasy players, that's a leverage play right there that you can take advantage of. Rafi, one last one. Give me something else and we can get out of here.
Shit, I'll jump ahead to a potential second round matchup I would be excited to see, and that's LSU and Maryland. With Bruno Fernando, I mean, it's really, really tough to guard him in the post this year. He tripled his assist numbers from last year. I think you touched on an article or maybe even a video earlier in the year, Rob, but his post passing has been a huge weapon this year, where sending a double team is really dangerous in a lot of ways. But LSU has two bigs in Naz Reid and Cavell Bigby-Williams, who have the size and athleticism to kind of guard him one-on-one in the post and not have to send a double team.
Now, let me ask you guys real quick then, too, about Yale versus LSU, because I think that Yale wins that game, and I've gotten a lot of pushback. Who had Yale for the breakdown?
I think that was that Jordan? Was that you? Or?
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know. Personally, LSU is very, very talented beyond Yale. Well, what's your take? Why are you going with that?
So I think that without Will Wade there, I think what Will Wade is able to do in-game in terms of adjustments that he makes and reads that he makes and plays that he calls is part of the reason that this program has been as good as they've been this year. And I do think that Yale has, obviously it's a talent disparity between the two programs, but Yale does have an NBA player in Mieoni, and they do have another high major guy in Jordan Bruner, and they make a lot of threes, and their top four scorers are all old, and Alex Copeland is a really, really, really good point guard, and they do have some guys that can make some shots. And while they don't have the size, throughout the season, I think the biggest weapon that LSU is going to have is the ability to get on the offensive glass. They're like top 10 or something like that in offensive rebounding percentage. And at the very least, Yale has proven to be a good team at cleaning off the defensive glass. Now, that might not matter when it comes to going, like the difference between Blake Reynolds trying to box out Cavell Bigby-Williams, who is an absolute monster. But I do think that there is some legitimacy to that. And I'm just kind of buying into the idea that I think the matchup makes sense from a numbers perspective. And I'm going to bet on the team that has the mid-major that has the NBA player going up against the high major that doesn't have their coach.
Yeah, and that is something that is certainly hard to evaluate. Like, there's no necessarily precedent, or certainly not a large enough sample size of precedents for what LSU is going through with Will Wade and how that would affect a team. But yeah, this time of year there's such a focus and it's just different in the tournament. We were in it last year when I was at New Mexico State, and everyone was picking us in the 12-5 game. And you spend the whole week fighting off the fact that everyone is texting you, every player is getting texts. Oh, I'm taking you in my bracket. I'm taking you in my bracket. So it's hard when you're in it. It definitely feels like the NCAA tournament is different. And then with the add in the Will Wade situation, and it's hard to say exactly what type of impact that has.
Fair enough.
Yeah, and it's not just those two guys. I mean, off the bench, you got Darius Days and Evan Williams, or you got, you know, two must box outs at all times. You know, they're playing two bigs, and even someone like Marlon Taylor, and we're not here to really comment on anything that's going on at LSU with you know, Will Wade or all that kind of stuff. We have no idea how it's affecting the team. But, you know, Will Wade's play calling isn't affecting those four guys going to the glass, and it isn't affecting Jamal Waters and ball screens, you know, his playmaking ability. And the stuff they run, whether it be the horns or the rush-out wedge ball screen for Jamal Waters, it's not overly complicated. You know, they rely on guys like Jamal Waters to make plays and those four bigs to clean up the offensive glass. And I don't think Will Wade being there or not being there really is going to change that.
Fair enough. I'm still not changing my pick, though. All right, guys, listen, I appreciate this, you guys hopping on short notice. Rafi, congratulations on your first podcast. I'm proud of you. You didn't do a bad job, even though you did pick Gardner Webb to beat Virginia in the first round of the tournament.
That's a lock.
Yeah, so again, Jordan, just remind everyone where they can find the Bible.
Yeah, at HoopVision68 on Twitter. It is the pinned account. Follow Rafi as well. I believe it's Rafi_Goldman. Is that right?
I think so.
Rafi_Goldman on Twitter. It is a $15 ebook that has some content that I don't think is out there otherwise.
Yep, it is definitely not. So, guys, appreciate the time. Thank you for coming on.
Thank you, Rob.
Appreciate it, Rob.
Thanks for listening. Follow me on Twitter.
Give me 5 stars.